Night pressed against the windows of New Scotland Yard, the lights of the city smudged behind a layer of condensation. With the exception of two brief toilet breaks and a visit to the stationery drawer, Baxter had not left her cupboard-sized office in Homicide and Serious Crime Command since arriving that morning. She stared at the tower of paperwork on the edge of her desk, balancing precariously over the waste paper bin, and had to fight all of her natural instincts not to give it a gentle prod in the right direction. At 34, she'd become one of the youngest female chief inspectors ever appointed within the Metropolitan Police, and this rapid ascent up the ladder had been neither expected nor particularly welcomed. But the supervisory vacancy and her subsequent overpromotion into it could be attributed solely to the Ragdoll case and her apprehension of the infamous serial killer the previous summer. The last chief inspector, Terence Simmons, had been forced to retire due to ill health, which everybody suspected had been exacerbated by the commissioner's threat to fire him should he refuse to leave voluntarily, the customary reflex gesture for a disillusioned public, like sacrificing an innocent to appease the ever-wrathful gods. Baxter shared the sentiment held by the rest of her colleagues, disgusted to see her predecessor being used as a scapegoat, but ultimately relieved that it wasn't her. She'd not even considered putting in an application for the newly vacated position until the commissioner had told her that the job was hers should she want it. She looked around her chipboard cell with its dirty carpet and dented filing cabinet, who knew what important documents were entombed within that bottom drawer she'd never been able to open, and wondered what the hell she'd been thinking. A cheer rose up out in the main office, but the sound didn't even register with Baxter, who had returned to a letter of complaint about a detective named Saunders. He'd been accused of using a profanity to describe the complainant's son. Baxter's only doubt regarding the claim was the relative tameness of the word he used. She started to type an official reply, lost the will to live halfway through, screwed up the complaint, and threw it in the general direction of the bin. There was a timid knock at the door before a mousy officer scuttled in. She collected up Baxter's near and not so near misses and dropped them into the bin before flaunting her world-class Jenga skills by placing another document on top of the unsteady tower of paperwork.
"I'm very sorry to disturb you," said the woman, "but Detective Shaw is about to make his speech. I thought you might want to be there."
Baxter swore loudly and rested her head on the desk.
"Present,"
she groaned, reminding herself too late. The nervy young lady waited awkwardly for further instructions. After a couple of moments, and unsure whether Baxter was even still awake, she quietly left the room. Dragging herself to her feet, Baxter walked out into the main office, where a crowd had gathered around Detective Sergeant Finley Shaw's desk. A 20-year-old banner, which Finley had actually purchased himself for a long-forgotten colleague, had been blue-tacked to the wall. "Sorry you're leaving." An array of stale supermarket donuts sat on the desk beside him, various reduced stickers documenting the contents' 3-day journey from unappetizing to inedible. Polite laughter accompanied the rasping Scottish detective's exaggerated threat to give Saunders one final punch in the face before he retired. They were all laughing about it now, but the last incident had resulted in one reconstructed nose, 2 disciplinary hearings, an hour's worth of form filling for Baxter. She hated these things. So awkward, so false, such an anticlimactic send-off after decades of service with so many close calls and so many horrific memories for him to take home as souvenirs. She stood at the back, smiling along in support of her friend, watching Finley fondly. It was the last proper ally she had in this place, the one remaining friendly face, but now he was leaving. She hadn't even brought him a card. Her office phone started to ring. She ignored it, watching Finley fail miserably to pretend that the bottle of whiskey they'd clubbed together to buy him was his favourite. His favourite was Jameson, same as Wolf. Her mind wandered. She remembered buying Finley a drink the last time they'd met up socially. Almost a year had passed since then. He told her that he never regretted his own lack of ambition. He'd warned her that the DCI role wasn't right for her, that she would be bored, frustrated. She hadn't listened, because what Finley couldn't understand was that she wasn't looking so much for a promotion as she was a distraction, a change, an escape. The phone in her office started to ring again and she glared back at her desk. Finley was reading through the variations of Sorry to See You Go that had been scrawled across a Minions card of which somebody had mistakenly believed him to be a fan. She checked her watch. She really needed to finish at a decent time for once.